Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 4, Life After Death. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hi, everybody.
Hey.
Dave, do you have site business?
Nah.
You don't want to tell everybody about your favorite podcast app, Stitcher, and how you use it to listen to this podcast now?
Look, it's available. If you want to use it, use it. It's not my recommendation. That's all. Look, them
and
look.
All right,
wait, hang on. All right, let's get into the weeds here for a second. Here's why.
Okay.
Well, two reasons. Historically, back in the day, they used to do some stuff that wasn't so great. They
have been acquired
by somebody else, so I think that's passed. So that's fine. The other thing they do, though, is they take the feed we give them and they retranscode the actual file. So the quality gets a little, you know, photocopy-y. Mm. Actually, Google does the same thing with their new Google Play podcasting. I'm sure you wouldn't notice it for a podcasting like this. But anyways, I'm just saying, like, why not just get it from the source? Use, you know, iTunes or, you know, whatever podcatcher app that just takes it from us. But if you do use Stitcher, we are now back on them. And, you know, like, we just want to be wherever you're listening to the stuff. And
that's right.
Yeah. So.
Buy an ad on this podcast, previously.tv/ads, or buy a shirt inspired by this podcast at clarkware.com. Let's do this, Sarah!
Yes, indeed. Oh, one more scheduling note. We will return to our two-a-week schedule.
Yep.
With our next episode, 505.
Correct. All right, let's go with our C story, which is Val runs Dylan. Dylan is still hanging out at the pool hall.
Stupid.
I am stupid. The dude he's playing with asks about Valerie. Dylan shrugs off the line of inquiry, saying he doesn't care what happened to her. But then Val shows up at Dylan's, where he immediately lays out his prejudice against anyone who lives at the Walsh house. Okay, dude. But when she obliquely reminds him about their successful bone sesh the other night, he can't help stepping aside and letting her in, as it were. And when Val really starts her rap, she shows how good a read she's gotten on Dylan already. However, before we play this clip, the business they've given Luke Perry to do in this scene is that he's peeling hard-boiled eggs, and like, it has relevance to this conversation they have, except Dylan, the dissolute, louche, drunk who lost all his money, is spending his afternoons fucking making hard-boiled eggs so he can have egg salad? I don't think so.
I mean, the detail that it was because of egg salad totally killed it for me, because I could totally see him being the, like, old school, like, watching a lot of Cool Hand Luke being all like 50s and Sal Paradise about these eggs, but no, he's making egg salad. Okay, Dorothy, whatever you say.
Anyway, I play clip.
What a nice slice of tomato. It's much nicer. Fuck's sake.
You know, you're the only one in this phony town who actually comes close to understanding me.
So Jim and Cindy aren't cutting it?
You're right. They are so squeaky clean. And I can't believe you went out with Brenda. And she's so not you.
Yeah, well, things change, you know. People change.
You know, at my father's funeral, one of my pious uncles gave me a rap about how eggs were the symbol of life. And that I should eat one as a symbolic gesture. Threw it away.
You don't believe in symbolism?
I don't believe in anything.
Ooh.
So your father's dead?
Killed himself with a gun in the bathroom.
Yeah, my dad's dead too. He got
just like Colonel Mustard
by a bomb in a car.
My God.
And then they call it for some pizza, and the pizza guy said, "Yeah, my dad's dead too. He was, ziplining, and things snapped
in the library with a candlestick." Yeah.
Miss Scarlet got her.
Is that why you live here alone?
No, I just like to be alone.
Listen, I'm really sorry that I wasn't upfront with you about everything when we met. I was just having some fun.
Hey, you had your fun. That's that.
So what does an egg mean to you?
Egg salad. Want some beer?
Got anything stronger?
Sure do.
He was blown up in a car by a bomb. Some of the worst
it's
writing.
It's like Battle of the Tryhards. Seriously, like just do it because no one cares. Just get on with it.
Some of the worst writing that scene since You Crud, I'm going to say. Anyway, once darkness has fallen, Dylan has also fallen prey to the charms of Val's magic vagina. He snaps on the light and immediately reaches over to the nightstand for a beer that, if he's worth a damn, should be warm by now, by the way. She says he hasn't told her any of his deep, dark secrets. He claims he has none in clip 3.
So what I see is what I get.
What do you see?
Poor little rich insect in Beverly Hills.
Yeah, right. And what are you, the innocent lamb from the wilds of Buffalo out here staying with Uncle Jim and Aunt Cindy?
Not that innocent.
Listen, whatever happens in here between me and you, I don't want it hitting the information superhighway. Got it?
Drink?
Okay. Because if you're looking for a boyfriend, you know, I mean, somebody that would, like, come over and take you out on a date, I'm not him.
So no miniature golf in the near future?
Not hardly.
Listen, not looking for a boyfriend, Dylan. It's not here.
So what's going on with you and Steve Sanders?
Not much.
Yeah, well, good. Let's keep it that way. Steve's
Again
an old friend
that.
Of mine. I'd hate to see him get burned.
Steve's a big boy, Dylan. If he doesn't like fire, he shouldn't be playing with matches.
Listen to you. You are a bad girl.
Depends on who you talk to.
Well, she's able to get wet while lying on those fucking sheets. She's a blind girl.
You hate those sheets.
Props. Jesus Christ. They're so terrible.
They're really ugly.
Fucking Fido Dido sheets. So awful. Hate.
Yeah. Also, since when does Dylan give a shit about Steve? Honestly.
Yeah, really.
Like, you're jealous. You can just say that. But anyway, Steve, speaking of, finds Val at the Peach Pit the next day. And passive-aggressively complains about her missing his dumb keg party, which we'll get to. Dylan enters in time to see Val and Steve sitting together and rudely orders coffee. When Val claims she and Dylan haven't met, Steve introduces them. Dylan is worse at faking it than she is and doesn't even look at her. And Steve challenges Val to make it up to him by going out with him. And after making sure Dylan hears, Val suggests miniature golf. Ha 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 ha. Moving on to our B story. Donna and David replace each other. Donna brings her laundry over to the Martin manse so that the housekeeper can do it for her. Gross. She's also brought her dry cleaning. This is a pretty sweet deal for Donna. Felice says Donna will need to marry a very rich man who can keep her in the manor to which she's become accustomed, and Donna gets mildly salty about it, like, do your own fucking laundry then, princess. But it's actually just a segue, because there's someone Felice wants to set her up with. He's a junior at CU and comes from a very good family. He must be hot, because Felice says in two different ways that he's good looking. he's coming over for tea with his mother, which Donna rightly bristles at, but Felice already promised Donna would be there. However, she doesn't remember the guy's name, which may be Garfield. And at school, oh God, Claire is in the computer lab using a hilariously primitive morphing program. Please go to previously.tv to the visual aids to see the gif I made of a picture of a guy that looks like a Stephen Avery mugshot morphing into like a puppy. So weird.
We actually already saw a more advanced version of this in Pretty in Pink, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
That their meet cute in the computer lab is like the flipping morph program. Like, oh, okay. It was 10 years before this. Yeah. Guys. Yeah. Nice 286. Enjoy.
And yeah, the computer is hella old, and it's such a... the program and the hardware and the fact that Claire is doing this with like spongy foam ear headphones on that are plugged into her black Walkman, which is also sitting on the jacks. It's like the 90s. Anyway, David rolls up and asks if Claire wrote the program. She did not. He recognizes her from his intro to media class. And in case you were worried about it, Claire is still a brainiac in clip number 4.
So are you majoring in communications?
No, double major, French Lit and Physics. Minor in communications.
Claire, show him up.
Yep, letting him know.
Mm-hmm.
Not that he takes a hint, sigh.
Yeah, I appreciate that she's sticks with that, though, and doesn't try to like be cute about it. Like, she's super smart, and everyone should know it, and I support her 100%.
Me too.
He asks her in a very convoluted way to do something with this show that he's half producing for the campus TV station. Nothing comes of it. Never mind. David has then lent Claire a camera for which for some reason she has on and pointed at herself and Donna while they paint the living room. She only describes David as a cute guy in one of her classes, which is misleading. Of course, Donna can't resist doing stuff with the camera, but they still both manage to talk about David without realizing they're referring to the same person. Felice calls. Donna orders her not to give this Garfield her phone number, but promises to go for tea. Claire invites Donna to come with her to this mystery man's TV show shooting tomorrow, and Donna agrees. Oh, God. Then when they show up at this thing, speaking of the 90s, Donna's got the baby barrettes in full effect. She's wearing a lace trim tank top under a tiny floral slip dress, thigh high black tights, and black ankle boots. In the 90s, you can see this in the visual aids. Seconds into this trip to the TV station, the truth about Claire's new guy is revealed, and Donna pieces out after clip number 5.
I know your friend. You can have him.
Oh!
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
And storyline. Just kidding.
When she takes off and Claire tries to stop her, David tells her to let Donna go and gives her the abridged version of why. Claire tells him that she's Donna's new roommate, and Donna says, oh, Claire's living in his old room. Later, Donna rants to Kelly about the Claire-David situation as they help Steve set up for his party at Keg House. Donna gets a look across the yard at a certain Griffin Stone, whom she's immediately smitten with because he's Casper Van Dien. He's from Buenos Aires, and he says kill them all. Kelly <Yes. laughs> tells her to go talk to him, but Donna is too nervous. Later, as they're getting ready for the party, Claire compliments Donna on her outfit and then apologizes for the awkwardness earlier. She thinks David and Donna could still work together even though they broke up, though Donna is not so sure.
Dara, that Starship Troopers reference just made me fall in love with you all over again.
Oh, thank you. In the hall, Kelly invites Claire to come with them to the party, but she declines on the grounds that she's too punk rock for this. I'm paraphrasing. Claire asks what the deal is with David and Donna's breakup, and Kelly sells Donna out immediately in clip number 6.
Well, I probably shouldn't be telling you this, but Donna is a virgin, and David used to be.
Oh.
I mean, that's a nice piece of business from La Robertson, especially since that line thinks it's cute but isn't. And can we also talk about what the fuck is going on with Kelly's hair?
Yeah.
What the fuck is going on with Kelly's hair?
It's like she's getting new layers cut into it between each episode. Like, just calm down. Because so the ends are now like really straggly. It's like the proto version of that Sally Hershberger haircut that everyone had in like the late 90s. But her hair is so thin that like for it to do anything other than just lie there, they have to cut so many layers into it. And it's like every time she got into the chair, she was like, no more.
More like Sally Sketchberger.
Good one, dude.
Yeah.
There are plenty of pictures.
Actually, in college, we used to... like Hershberger was like when someone got off a good burn, it was like, oh, it's Star of Taxi, Judd Hershberger. We were bored.
Anyway, you can see Kelly's bad hair and many other things in the visual aids, as previously mentioned, at previously.tv. There's some pointless business around Donna's outfit. And when she leaves again to change, Claire tries to casually ask Kelly's permission to pursue David, but Kelly dodges the question and leaves. Wise. At the party, Donna tells Kelly that Griffin Stone is there, and Kelly's like, duh, he lives here. He comes over like a functional adult, introduces himself, and asks him to dance, and Kelly gives them a double thumbs up, which is sort of annoying and sort of cute. While at the apartment, David comes by to see Claire. He'll only come in after she assures him that Donna and Kelly aren't there. Almost immediately, after looking at the terrible wall that, like, Donna and Claire just tried a whole bunch of colors, and they were like, eh, that's good enough, and just left the wall, and it looks really stupid. You can also see that in the visual aids. Almost immediately, David says maybe they shouldn't be doing this because he doesn't want to hurt Donna more than he already has. And Claire responds to that the way you would expect an 18-year-old to in clip 7.
You know, I think you're a really nice guy, David. I don't know exactly what happened between you and Donna, but I do know there's three sides to every story. And then there's the truth.
The truth is, I acted like a jerk. The only way I can live with myself is if I don't do this.
Then you better get out of here. I'm not very good at being good.
Of all the 3-bedroom apartments in all the world, why'd you have to pick this one?
Location, location, location.
You know, when you learn how to write, one of the first things they tell you is try to avoid cliches you're used to hearing a lot. And definitely, I would say, don't write a cliche and then answer it with another cliche. CC everyone who wrote on the show this season. Oh, my God.
I mean, yeah, Kath Robb's delivery is, again, like almost bails it out. Not quite.
Yeah. Anyway, before long, Donna and Griffin are flirting hard on the dance floor. He claims that if he'd met her when he was a freshman, he never would have spent a year abroad. And after complimenting her dancing, he accidentally makes things awkward briefly in clip number 8.
So, what else are you good at?
What?
Rollerblading, hand gliding, 100-meter freestyle. What's your best event?
You know, I'm not really the outdoor type.
Oh, so how do you feel about indoor sports?
Thanks for the dance, Griffin.
Whoa, wait a minute. Did I just say something wrong?
No, not at all.
You think?
Look, if you're looking for a wild night, I'm not your girl, okay?
Hey, I'm sorry. I was just kidding around. I'd like to get to know you better. Really.
Even if I tell you right now that I'm a good Catholic girl?
Then we're made for each other. I'm a good Catholic boy.
You are?
You want to test me on my catechisms?
No.
Not really. No one cares.
Barf.
Snore.
Indoor sports. I mean, dude. Anyway, then it's the
have
day
I
of the
mentioned I have a queso pool in my room.
Then it's the day of the tea setup at Felice's, and Donna is already testy as hell as her date's mom shows up. And if you've never seen TV before, it will shock you to learn that her date is Griffin. What? He totally knew it was Donna all along and didn't say anything because he was checking her out. He suggests that they skip the tea and go to the beach instead. Donna's into it. At the beach apartment, Claire walks David through her storyboard for whatever they're working on. He has his arm around her in this non-committal way I, for some reason, find infuriating. Like, they're sitting on the floor with their backs against like the seat of the couch, basically. And so he's got his arm on the cushions, but it's like sort of around her shoulders, but sort of, I don't know, see it in the visual aids. I don't know why it makes me so mad. He's into whatever she's working on. She says she hasn't had a strictly platonic relationship since she was 13, but it's not bad. I assume she means with the dude. Also, what about that guy at prom I thought was hot? I mean, never mind. Anyway, just then Donna and her terrifying boobs emerge from her room in a string bikini top that is not up to the task at all. You can see the proof in the visual aids if you dare. It's slightly awkward when Donna sees Claire and David together, but she says she's okay with all of them working together and being friends. And when Griffin wanders in, Claire and David figure out why. You can also see in the visual aids the shelf of hair that like sticks out so far on the back of Casper Van Dien. It makes no
sense. It's like the back of a city bus got affixed to his head. Like, oh, total bus head.
It
why?
Totally is. All right, moving on to our A story, since we must. Brandon is sad. Oh God, Brandon got picked to deliver Josh's eulogy, clip number 9.
Jesus.
Josh Richland was a profound figure on this campus.
What?
Most of us knew him as the managing editor of the Condor, and more recently, as a candidate for president of the student body. Tomorrow would have been Josh's first day in office.
Tomorrow.
Under his jurisdiction, the Student Senate would have convened. And under his leadership, this university would have set forth on a path of growth and unification. Unfortunately for all of us, a senseless tragedy has made that impossible. Josh's loss will be felt not only by this institution, but by the future he will never have a chance to influence. But what Josh has left us is as important as what he would have given us. His hopes and dreams, his talent and wisdom are now a legacy. A legacy for this campus to live up to. The legacy of a brilliant young man who was taken from us too soon. And it is incumbent upon all of us
incumbent.
Not to let Josh Richland's dreams die with him.
All right, couple of things. First of all,
he's bunch of things.
He's delivering a eulogy, but he does it in that Bray tone that we've all become so familiar with. Like, why is he mad at Josh's death? You know, like,
yeah. It's also a cliche-otron that he appears to have pulled out of a series of fortune cookies that were misprinted.
Yep. Also,
what are Claire and Cindy doing there? Why is David wearing a like XXL V-neck scrub top over a sweater at a funeral?
Why is Andrea there with her infant baby? Why is there a woman a few rows in front of Kelly who's like sitting there glaring with her arms crossed, like the maddest extra, so pissed that Brandon is delivering this eulogy?
Good for that lady.
It's a lot of mistakes, especially since we're about to find out that a blood relative of Josh is present. But anyway, after the service, the chancellor appears to pick up a paycheck. I mean, tell Brandon he did well and has the chancellor's support. Andrea comes over and Brandon bites her head off for talking to Alex. She reminds him that Alex is a member of the Senate whom Brandon will have to learn to work with. Steve thinks the way to cheer up Brandon is to make him go to this keg party the next night. And then Josh's older sister, Gloria, comes over to introduce herself and thank him for his speech. Brandon said he didn't know Josh well, which leads him to wonder why he was the one eulogizing him. Like, presumably Josh had a friend. Gloria will be packing up Josh's stuff and offers to give Brandon something to remember Josh by. And she leaves and Brandon makes it creepy in clip number 10.
Look at that. She walks just like Josh.
What?
And he's still with that impatient tone. Like,
yes.
What, could no one direct him?
I don't.
Like, this is not sadness that you are essaying here.
No. It's like everything is through gritted teeth. Also, weird thing to have observed about Josh. Also, weirder
thing
to say
about a woman.
At
his sister's ass, I presume.
Yeah. Anyway. So Gloria and Brandon silently and inefficiently pack up Josh's room. Gloria also packs in some low-key shade in clip 11.
He never mentioned you, that's why I ask.
Gloria 2016, but also remember this when we're subjected to a fortnight-long fluffing via epistolary exposition at the end.
From the
Moving
dead.
On.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Gloria says it doesn't matter if he never mentioned Brandon because Josh was also just bad at keeping in touch in general. Brandon says he was busy, I guess the subject being, or else he would have been talking about me all the time. Anyway, weirdly, Gloria offers him one of Josh's sweaters. She's piled them all up. There's like 12 dark blue sweaters, and I cut a picture of it in the visual aids, but then I realized if I piled up all of my horizontal Breton striped t-shirts, it would be like 15 times as big as that. So whatever. Josh had a signature style, and I support him. May he rest in peace. then Brandon comes over to the beach apartment and finds Kelly asleep under her psychology textbook, which is, by the way, called psychology. After he wakes her up, she demonstrates that she has not learned anything in those classes in clip 12.
So what did Josh's sister give you?
Motions to the sweater.
A sweater? If it were my friend who died, I think I'd want something a little more significant than knitwear.
What was I supposed to do? Ask for his watch?
It's just creepy.
Seriously.
This whole thing is creepy.
Why don't you come to bed?
I don't feel like it.
Well, then why did you come over here at 10 o'clock at night?
I don't know.
For a beach, you idiot.
She didn't want to be alone?
All right, then. Talk to me. Tell me what's going on.
Kelly, I watched a friend of mine burn to death, and the only thing I could think of to say about him was that he was a profound figure on campus.
Yeah, that was bad.
Brandon, I think you're being a little hard on yourself.
I just spent the last 3 hours with Josh's sister, and she kept asking me, why Josh? Why Josh? I couldn't even look her in the eye. It could have been me in that car.
But it wasn't.
But it could have been.
I know that's the exact same thing that Dylan said when his father died.
You know, I thought I didn't want to be alone, but I really don't want to talk either.
We don't have to talk.
I gotta go.
Am I gonna see you tomorrow?
He shrugs in a very shitty way. Brandon does no fewer than three shitty, dismissive shrugs, and I know there's that many because I made GIFs of all of them. He is such a dick. Like, I know he's grieving, but she's just trying to help. And on that, though, like the fact that she's the psychology student, it really is weird that they keep making her be the one who like doesn't know what to say.
Yeah. And then makes it about her not knowing what to say. And then that becomes a whole like, well, you could have been more sympathetic about the fact that I didn't know what to say. Like,
right.
Really?
It's not about you. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also like this, you know. Just be quiet and let him talk to you. Don't order him to do it. Anyway, this is stupid, as you said. The next day, Kelly complains to Andrea and Hannah in a stroller about how bad she is at talking to Brandon. Andrea tries to reassure her. Kelly asks Andrea's advice about how to talk to Brandon, but Andrea's basically like, I don't know this dude anymore, but her advice is to love him. Andrea then meets Brandon in the hall with baby. So again, her childcare plan is no plan. It's so infuriating. Because she wanted to be there for her, Brandon's first Senate meeting. But when they enter, they see that underneath the boom mic, you can see in the visual aids, there are not nearly as many people in attendance as there should be. And they soon find out why in clip 13.
Alex, good to see you. Listen, Josh always had a lot of respect.
Hey, I had nothing against Josh.
Got something you want to say?
Yeah. I'm leading a coalition of Senate members to challenge the legitimacy of your presidency.
On what grounds?
Constitutional. The rules of succession are not clear and have never been challenged.
That's ridiculous.
Tell it to a judge.
If you can find one who gives a rat's anything, I congratulate all of you.
Even in student court, I mean, who could possibly care at all? God, anyway, Brandon calls the meeting to order and immediately dismisses it as cockishly as possible, as I assume goes without saying. Then Brandon is moping at the peach pit when Nat sets a tray of food in front of him and orders him to eat. Brandon doesn't know if he's okay, and they have this exchange in clip 14.
Everyone's really going out of their way to be nice, say the right thing and everything, but
I'm a douche.
Ever since Josh died, I feel like I don't have a friend in the world.
You got a million friends.
36 you shouldn't. I can count.
Brenda already cut from the list.
Have you talked to Dylan lately? He's been through this.
Dylan and I aren't exactly on the best of terms these days.
I can understand that. My silent partner's been a little more silent than usual lately.
Got yourself lucky.
Nat. When you were laying on the floor over there, and Dylan and I were giving you CPR, what were you thinking about?
I wasn't ready to go yet. I'm glad the man upstairs agreed with me.
Does that mean the man upstairs said something against Josh?
Yes!
Then why him and not me?
Hey.
Because God hates us.
If you're asking questions like that, you're going to drive yourself crazy.
Yeah, why was it Josh and not Brandon?
Seriously. This would have been a much different and, in my opinion, preferable show.
Yeah.
And really, like, are we still doing that, like, well, does that mean that God hated such and so who died? Like, how... That conversation or that whatever dialogue exchange needs to be banned from TV post-death episodes forever.
Yes.
Nobody above the age of 5 actually thinks that this is the fucking algebra. So just leave it out.
I would have said high school, but yes. I mean, you're right. It's really so simplistic and dumb, and no one thinks that way.
And no one cares, and we never saw him again. So
yeah,
move on.
Nat tells Brandon it's going to take time for him to get through this, but in the meantime, he has to eat. And I know it sounds unbelievable, which is why I made a GIF, but Brandon even finds a way to make eating a fry, to do it in a dickish fashion.
Wow.
Yeah, he, like, doesn't move his lips. It's like that when you're, like, 3 more bites and then you can leave the table and then you are, like, a huge drama queen about the bites and taking a teeny nibble and then, like, rolling your eyes. It's basically that.
Yeah. I was going to show it to Dave, but I'll show him later. And you can see it now in the visual aids. Then it's Steve's dumb party. There's a person in it. First of all, there's a person in a tiny backpack, because obviously. There's also a clown. Like, someone is there in full clown makeup. Like, but it's like patriotic clown. Like, it's October. Like, none of this makes sense. Anyway. Brandon morosely enters the party, gets handed some punch, and scolds Steve for serving alcohol. And by that, I mean he brays at him. Steve plays dumb as a joke, tells Brandon to lighten up. He asks after Val, who had told Steve that she would get a ride with Brandon, but of course she did not. Kelly finds a still pissy Brandon and tells him she's there for however much or little he needs her, which is what he needed to hear. So she figured it out. Everyone, it's okay. We briefly step outside where the girl we heard up top of this episode is trying to make out with Sarah. Take it.
Okay. It has since been explained to me with using small words that this is not possible. But I really like the frame I happened to grab of her, like, getting ready to scream at everyone. The guy she's making out with is, like, 2/3 of his face or, like, 3/5 of his face is visible. And I'm like, it's puffy Luke Kirby. Apparently it is, like, really extra not possible that it is Luke Kirby, who would have been, what was it, 14?
He was 16 at the time.
Okay,
this episode
when this was filmed, and would not have been that puffy. But I really think the guy looks like Luke Puffby, and we really need your help in the comments to determine whether or not I am crazy.
Luke Kirby,
for this reason, I think that ship has sailed in the larger sense, but yeah. So yes, Luke Puffby, not Luke Puffby, help us out.
You remember him, of course, as John Stern from Rectify, or as the reporter dude from Astronaut Wives Club, and the sexy guy from Take This Waltz many years ago. Go to the previously.tv visual aids and then tell Sarah whether she is crazy or not crazy about thinking that Luke Kirby, probably in school in Hamilton, Ontario at the time of this shooting, was actually making out with this lady.
I don't know. Maybe he and Priestley were, like, family friends from
That's true.
Around the way.
You're,
I don't know.
You're right. You never know.
Or
Robertson,
know each
for
other,
that matter.
Right?
Kathleen Robertson's Canadian, too.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, moving on. Campus security shows up because everyone at the party is a drunk idiot, and Steve is left holding the bag until he spots Brandon and makes him go handle it with him. The cops want to go in and look around, given the beer cans on the lawn, but Brandon introduces himself, drops his fakey title, and claims he came to break up the party, and somehow this works. Steve is thrilled that he's got a friend with that much juice, but Brandon angrily tells him not to put him in that position again. Shut up, Brandon. That is why people enter student government, I'm sure.
Yeah. Speaking of, also, you just facilitated like 17 cases of alcohol poisoning by not just telling the truth. So you're the problem. And go fuck yourself.
Yep. Speaking of shut up, Brandon, Chancellor gets one more scene to give a very testy Brandon some bad news about Alex's legal challenge in clip 15.
So the university's legal counsel has advised me that unless we're careful, we could wind up in court over this.
So am I president or not?
Technically, you're the acting president until this challenge plays out. I'm afraid you're a bit of a lame duck.
Well, why don't I make things easier on everyone and just resign? I mean, they elected Josh president, not me.
Let's Kill just yourself. Let things take their course. Situations like this settle down with a little bit of time.
Because no one cares.
Hang in there with me. That's the best way to honor Josh's memory.
So,
Who cares?
No one cares.
Who
Tara
cares?
What?
Who cares? Like, what is
who
Alex-
cares though?
But who cares? Like, what is Alex's remedy? Like, does he want another election after the one they just had 6 seconds ago? Like, these things cost money. Presumably, if he's, you know, all about student rights, like, he wouldn't want to spend
money on
something.
And doesn't
he
have
so
classes
stupid.
To go to? Like, all these people who, like, exist to be obstacles to the great Brandon Walsh, like, go crack a book.
Yeah.
Over your head, preferably. Because I'm becoming increasingly enraged at the fact that we're being asked to believe that anyone cares.
Yeah.
No one cares.
Nope.
What cares? I'm losing it, you guys, because no one cares.
Yeah, let's wrap it up. Chancellor has also heard about the Keg House situation and for some reason is approving of the way Brandon handled it. Okay. He also asked how things are with Brandon and Claire.
Counsel.
Brandon very nervously says that they're fine and then says she's living with good friends of his. The Chancellor makes it weird by saying that Claire is fond of him and Brandon dodges that and leaves. Later, at home, Brandon flashes back to Josh's last moments on Earth. The trauma face he makes when he comes out of it is hilarious in the visual aids. He looks like someone... He looks like he's in the middle of getting a prostate exam, actually. Like, he looks like someone just stuck a finger up his butt. Cindy pokes her head in and apologetically says there's someone there to see him. He doesn't want to see anyone until Cindy says that it's Josh's sister. And downstairs, Gloria gives Brandon something her mother thought he would want to see. It's a letter from Josh to his mom. Clip 16.
Dear Mom, I don't have much time to write because the election is tomorrow. Chances are I'm not going to win. But even if I lose, I've won because I found a new friend.
Oh,
a real friend.
God.
Believe it or not, a WASP from Minnesota named Brandon Walsh. He's a great guy. And the truth of the matter is, last year we were so competitive that we practically tried to kill each other. But now we're on the same team, and it's a good thing, because if you were running against me, I'd have to vote for him. Everyone knows he'd make a better president than I would. You always said that college is really about finding those few people who you'll know and love for the rest of your life. Well, I think I found one.
Holy shit, is that corny.
Oh my God, writer's room, get off your fucking knees with Brandon. It's gross.
Also, this doesn't sound like he made a friend so much as he was really in love with Brandon.
Yeah.
Like, calibrate where on the love dial this is supposed to be, because you're turned it all the way to 11. Calm it down.
Yeah. Speaking of miniature golf, pretty sure we're in the fantasy putting from the rough department.
Brandon, we see, has been reading this letter to Kelly and confides in her with no embarrassment, by the way, that he hated Josh when he first met him. And he never got a chance to tell Josh that he no longer thought he was a jerk. I have to think Josh probably figured it out when Brandon decided to run for office with him. But the letter has led Brandon to a resolution in our final clip.
Josh and I talked about doing great things if we got elected.
Brandon, you did get elected.
You're right. I'm not gonna give that up without a fight.
Oh, great.
I can't. Otherwise, it might as well have been both of us in that car.
Oh my God.
Stop making us wish for what we can't have.
Seriously. Also, let's bring the sliding doors rhetoric down a little bit.
Yeah.
It's student government and no one cares.
Speaking of no one cares, let us end this by naming our MVP of the episode. Josh's sweater.
Yeah, everyone's pretty terrible. Actually, I'm going to give it to Felice, who says, Donna, don't be a pill, because that's one of my favorite expressions.
That's a good pick. She also lets Donna do her laundry there, which is nice. Something that I wouldn't necessarily think Felice could be. But on the other hand, it might be that she doesn't trust Donna to be able to do it herself. Either way.
True.
Good call with Felice. Least valuable player. Brandon. All right. Well, let's do the Moo Moo Parker Challenge. Five ways from this episode, Brandon might have ended up dead. Smothered with a sweater?
Falls off the podium during the eulogy?
Oh, yeah. Crushed under the gavel that he calls the meeting to order with because he's wee?
Chokes on his French fry of grief?
Finally, we haven't been talking enough about the boots that he's wearing in every scene because the toes are like totally scuffed to shit in this very studied, fakey way. And again, I'm sure the reason that Jason Priestley is wearing them is because they have 7 sets of lifts in them because they're trying to disguise how short he is. But let's say they're steel-toed boots and he kicks himself in the nuts with them fatally by accident. Whoops. Hands up, that makes 5.
Oh, God. Love it. Next time on Again With This, Kelly hates Valerie, Dylan stealing from the pit register, and Steve's throwing a rave because 90s. Also, how do you talk to an angel? Well, hold on, because you're about to find out. Our visual aids are spelled with 1D because that's all our mamas could afford, and you can find them on our website at previously.tv. You can also follow our website on Twitter at previouslytv. I'm Dead Man Sweater Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. Casual, dressy, preppy, or grunge, it's Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And Home of the Free, Land of the Rave, our producer David T. Cole is on Instagram at Glark. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.
Just watching the
showing him the morphing
mug shots of dog morphing. That was amazing. It's not really a morph though, is it? It's just like
no,
a
but
fade.
You know, yeah, but, I guess.
We don't have the budget.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.